The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 1 Podcast.
And welcome in. Another day here, and a busy one indeed. Thanks so much for making time for us on this Tuesday. We have a lot to get to, and we will not waste another second. Straight to the headlines. And South Carolina heading to the Final Four. That happened yesterday. It was somewhat expected. Well, how about absolutely expected? They've been the best team all year long, have perhaps the best player. And even Kim Mulkey, our guest yesterday, said they would get there. She guaranteed it, and she was correct. Maryland, a gritty team, but not enough to stop South Carolina. So we have the Final Four set, South Carolina and Iowa. That is a game that many think could shatter records because of the star players on both sides. Of course, the early game Friday night, LSU and Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech, the number one seed, also managed to advance. On the men's side, a lot of folks are kicking themselves. How did this happen? You had three SEC teams in the final 16, nearly had five at one time in the round of 32. It looked like that was going to happen. And maybe it's Kentucky's fault. Really? That's according to Blake Topmeyer, and Blake Topmeyer says it. It must be true. Or could it be Parity's fault? Well, I don't know if that's a good way of asking the question, but what about NIL, the transfer portal? A lot of those issues have played a factor in what we have ended up with in the Final Four. And Jesse Washington from Anscape has some very interesting opinions. Jesse, first of all, thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to our show.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So, Jesse, we're all looking at the brackets. Most of ours are shattered. How did we end up with two outliers, to say the least, Florida Atlantic, Miami, even though they're in the ACC? On the other side, San Diego State got in there. There has to be a reason, and I know that you have come up with a solution. What is it?
Man, the reason is that the playing field is being leveled, and we're in a totally new era of college basketball where the transfer portal and NIL money has really evened it out. You know, these blue bloods and these big-time programs can't just run roughshod over everybody anymore, because you've got experienced 4 and 5 year guys leveling up, going to programs where they can really do their thing. And I think it's great. I think the madness is at an all time high, and I love it.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because there obviously, Jesse, a lot of people who are wondering, where's Kentucky? Where's Duke? Where's North Carolina? The usual suspects, Kansas. We had a lot of them last year in the Final Four. So let's dig into this. Let's start with the transfer portal, because that really is enabling a lot of it. NIL too, but I want to get to that in a second. How has the portal affected what we are seeing right now?
Right. So, you know, for those who have been under a rock for the past couple of years, nowadays players can leave a school and play immediately at another school, whereas in the past they had to sit out a year. And that was really discouraging to a lot of guys. So what that has done has gotten a lot of talent to its right level. And so these quote unquote mid majors, and you know, SDSU and FAU, you know, they were top 25 in a lot of the college basketball metrics and rankings all season. So to call them a mid major is a little crazy, but it's getting better talent there. So you might be the seventh guy at a Power Five school, and you're like, man, I'm better than that. I want to go over here and average 20. And now the transfer portal allows you to do that. It also can allow a guy to go from one Power Five to another and really be a difference maker, like Nigel Pack at Miami. And that ties into the whole NIL thing also. So overall, what this transfer portal does is distributes the talent more evenly so that the quote unquote lesser known schools now really have a chance to give the business to the big guys.
Talking to Jesse Washington from ESPN and Anscape, and you mentioned Miami, and they are the most famous NIL school right now in the country because of John Ruiz and all the things that he has done. We think about that in football terms. However, they made a big impact, obviously, in basketball, too, with one player in particular and a few others that have Miami's earned their way in, but still, the thought of Miami being in the Elite Eight 2 years in a row and finally the Final Four under a legendary Hall of Fame coach is still a little bit surprising to the Blue Bloods, as I said earlier.
It is surprising, but I think in a good way. And, you know, I know that this is the SEC network and that the SEC historically before NIL has really perfected the art of, let us say, inducing players, perhaps with some sort of financial incentive, perhaps, to attend these esteemed universities. And, you know, I'm not mad at that, man. Let these kids get it how they live, as they say. But what this NIL thing does is now it legalizes it, and I think it levels the playing field in terms of compensating guys to go to these schools. So John Ruiz can come in at Miami and say, hey, it's all above board. Nigel Pack, here's a nice $800,000 for you to come here. You know what I mean? And then their other best player, Isaiah Wong, is like, oh, wait a minute, but I'm the best player on a team that went to the Sweet 16 last year, the Elite Eight. So, you know, where's my money? I like that these kids are getting paid. I think that they deserve it. I think that NIL has really allowed more funds to move between the haves and the players in a way that's beneficial for the sport. And it's just exciting, man. You know, we don't want to see the same old schools every year. I'm sorry, fans of the Blue Bloods and everything, but to get some new people in the mix, to me, that's really what March Madness is all about.
Jesse, I want to talk about that aspect of it because you see all the Blue Bloods out, and but it seems like on signing day, Kentucky is about to clock in with the best class it's ever had, or in recent years, I should say. It always seems to be the same, but I know a lot of the things you've said get into the way, the transfer portal in NIL, but what do you think is going on at places like Kentucky, who have not been to the Final Four since 2015?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that there's a real specific answer. First of all, shout to my man, Adu Thierro, from my hometown here, outside of Pittsburgh, Swickley, PA. He's a freshman, doing it the old-fashioned way. Not a big, highly prized recruit, but he's going to make a difference at Kentucky. So we love you, Adu. Now, Kentucky is a little bit, they perfected the old method, which was bring in all of these great high school kids, bring in five or six of the top 10 and roll the ball out and let them get busy. And that worked for a while, you know, but nowadays what we're seeing is the difference between playing an 18-year-old and a 23 or a 24-year-old. You know, these guys are a lot older than they have been in the past. The transfer portal has allowed these guys to get out from under perhaps a more highly ranked freshman and go somewhere where they can fully express their talents. And I don't care how good you are, unless you're a super generational talent like maybe a Zion Williamson. Right. If you're 18, you have a really hard time competing against a grown man. And we're seeing whole rosters stocked with grown men. So I think that that's what's going on at a place like Kentucky. They haven't quite adjusted yet. However, I fully expect these blue bloods to adjust and to start having a mix. So instead of bringing in five freshmen, we're going to bring in two or three. And then we're going to go and get that other transfer that's really going to make a difference here. You know, I mean, the Blue Bloods have always shown the ability to figure out how to win at college basketball. Whatever the era, whatever the rules, whatever rules need to be skirted, they're going to figure it out. So I think Kentucky and North Carolina and all these people are going to get right back in it. You're going to see more transfers. We know they have the NIL money. You're going to see more transfers, more older, mature teams, and then we'll be in a new era again.
Jesse, we're 3 years removed from the COVID season getting wiped out. But I wonder, and I haven't had a chance to really look at the data, maybe you have, of what effect that extra year has had maybe on this tournament. Because you're right, these guys are older than we're familiar with them being or accustomed to them being.
I don't have the data either, but I think that it has a huge effect because it's another year under your belt. And let's not forget, a lot of these guys, when they get to campus, are a year old already. It's very common for kids to do a postgraduate year to reclassify. So you've got a whole lot of 20-year-old freshmen playing college basketball. Tack 5 years on top of that, you know, these are guys who, you got guys younger than that in the NBA. And so I think that this COVID season really allowed another season of guys maturing, getting more experience. A guy like Marquise Knoll, you know, down there at Kansas State, man, had a crazy, tremendous season and a run in the tournament. Was he ready to do this last year? Maybe, maybe not, but he got that extra bit of seasoning that really put it over the top.
Before you go, I want to ask you about something you said a few minutes ago. I agree with you, by the way, but I know we're going to get calls who say,
come on, Jesse,
you really can't believe that this is a better system.
Players making money.
It's so convoluted in the way it used to be.
I know I threw you an underhanded softball there, but I want to hear you expound on that before you go.
Right. So why is it better that the guys can essentially be bought? You know, that's what we're talking about here. Let's keep it a buck. Schools are buying players. And even though the rule says you're not supposed to be pay for play, but let's be real. John Ruiz has like a medical device manufacturing company. How is Nigel Pack, how is, you know, going to endorse that and increase his business? He's not. You know, he is getting paid to play basketball. Here's why I think it's a better thing. Because the system was bent to the point of breaking with athletes not being compensated while everyone else in the system is making money. You know, it was at a breaking point. A couple of years ago, some guys from Rutgers said, we were contemplating not playing in a tournament game. You know, there was a movie that came out, National Champions, about a star quarterback who's in the national championship game who says, I'm going to protest this injustice by sitting the game out. So this talk was in the air. Now, NIL is not a solution to the problem because it's not sharing the money that the NCAA generates. It's extra money. However, it's sort of taken the edge off, you know. So I think that that has really put some eased the tension that was all up in college athletics at the top level where they're making all this money. Now, the last thing about that is that the kids deserve it. They work so hard. They have more than a full 40, 50 hours a week, more than a full-time job, playing sports, putting their lives and their bodies on the line for these universities. They deserve to be compensated. NIL does that. That's why I think it's a good thing.
Finally, with all these billion-dollar television deals, especially in the Big Ten and the SEC, do you see this getting even more intense down the road with players wanting some of the TV money as well?
I do. I think it's inevitable. I've watched it go from just a little bunch of people grumbling over in the corner to entering the mainstream, to there really being a chorus of influential voices who say that the players deserve some of the revenue. I had the privilege of working with Coach John Thompson on his autobiography, I Came as a Shadow. And Coach Thompson said in his book, I believe the players should share some of the money. You've got a lot of the elder statesmen coaches, Coach K, Coach Williams, Coach Boeheim, easing out of the game. I think they're going to look at it and add their voices to the mix. I'm not sure in what direction, but some of them are going to say, let's share the revenue with the players. And then the game will reinvent itself again, and we'll be in a whole new era of college basketball.
An absolutely fascinating conversation with Jesse Washington. Jesse, many, many thanks. It was great to finally have you on. You be well. We'll hopefully talk again soon. We head to the break right now as the show begins. On a Tuesday, we'll get to your phone calls and reaction right after this.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back here about to get to your phone calls for the first time on this Tuesday. How about the new marketing code will prohibit college betting payments and partnerships, I should say, that so the schools cannot partner. Big injury in Georgia, Kendall Milton injured. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on. And this is really crazy. We'll have Mike Tannenbaum, on later, and he has Hendon Hooker higher than any person on the face of the earth, including Hendon Hooker. Bryce Young, CJ, Will Anderson, Levis, and Hooker. Hooker is ahead of Anthony Richardson and pretty much everyone else. We'll talk to Mike in a few minutes. Gordon Whitener, I don't know if you've had a chance to hear from him, but he will really be an intriguing guest as we talk to him a little bit later on. Former coach turned film producer. He's a business executive in the sports media world. He recruited Barry Sanders at Oklahoma State. Connor Riley later on. Your phone call is next at 855-242-7285, and we begin in Tuscaloosa. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Paul. My sapient mind has been, our brain has been working overtime since last night when we last stopped at the end of the show. And I want to elaborate on finishing up what we were talking about the callers, et cetera. I'm going to tell you something, Paul. I've been sitting here just like I did 10, 12 years ago, excited, waiting and anxiously to hear, and I'll tell you why, to hear the show. And I will tell you exactly the reason for this show being good the way it is now. I'm expecting, where callers come up with the unexpected, Paul. Guests come up, every time we hear guests, we know what they're going to say. I've said that years ago. I know you may be being made to do that from ESPN, whatever. But we love the fact that when you get a caller, any callers, you got the unexpected factor, and that's what makes it so exciting. That's what it really amounts to, Paul. I'm telling you, I've got my finger on the pulse, and I know I do.
Well, I'm glad you do. Jim, the callers are great. You know that. I've said that 1,000 times.
I knew you were going to come out.
But there is a reason for the guests, and it's not just because somebody's making us do it. There are a lot of things that we feel that are interested to the conversation every day.
Well, I'm not saying completely you're wrong or anything, but I'm just saying the aspect of the show is the unexpected from the callers. You get unexpected stuff. Good and bad, but you get that's the exciting part. I'm telling you, Paul, most of you, if not all your calls, guests, I know what they're going to say, except Danny Sheridan and except Tim Brando, and you don't have them anymore. But that's what we want of guests, but not the same old garbage, the same old, you know, just not the same old, same old. That's what Jeff was trying to get at yesterday. And by the way, Jeff and Saban being on the same page. That's pretty impressive, Paul. That's pretty good. Pretty good radio, pretty good TV stuff.
Yeah, I apologize to you, Jim, for not being quite as in love with Jeff's calls as you are. To me, he's a broken record. He's not exciting. He's not interesting. There's nothing I'm anticipating because you can just hit the tape from one Jeff call to the next because it's always the same.
But every time he gets on, you leave him on 4 or 5 minutes, maybe 6 or 7 minutes. So there's got to be a reason.
Well, reason why he's on 4 or 5 minutes because he doesn't take a breath. There's nowhere to jump in and hang up on him.
Yeah, but you cut people off before that don't take breaths.
Well,
you let him talk.
I hate to
you
be rude, just cut somebody off in mid sentence.
There's something to what he's saying, and you know that, Paul. Come on, give me a break.
Jim, listen. We rarely are on completely different sides, but. I'm sorry. If Jeff called up and said, "Hey, I got something I want to talk to you about," but it's always the same thing. It's always let's draw and quarter somebody for getting a wrong prediction.
Well, that's not exactly.
He's a broken record, Jim. I'm sorry.
That's not exactly. Will you let me talk? You make your case, but you won't make when you don't like it. You don't make let other people make like me. You never want to make me let me make my case. He had other aspects of the call yesterday besides just that one sudden. and I like his calls. I tell you, I talk to other people. They like his song calls. He doesn't trash people like some of these people callers do. He brings something to the table. He really does. I think I'm a pretty good qualified person because I bring something to the table too. And you know that whether it's sports or not, I bring something to the table. That's just a fact, and you know it. And that's why you put page 54 in the book, and people don't like it. And you know the main guy that don't like it because he ain't on page 54. Come on, Paul. If Bobby, if I'm home with you, so say, give me a break.
I am giving you one, Jim. I'm not going to respond. I'm just going to say thank you very much for the call. John is up next. Hello, John.
Boy, I went cold turkey since March 15th. That kind of broke me in. I guess I'll take the Stockholm Syndrome approach and just kind of ease into it this week. But Jim kind of revved it up. And at least Jeff has one friend we know of, right?
I realize, John, I am not as good a judge of character of what makes a good call as Jim. So I'm simply from that one going to defer to him on every question.
Absolutely. Check with Mr. Passive Aggressive. I agree. Hey, Paul, before I get to my Pac-12, I was going to give you a couple highlights on my trip, particularly because you, like me, like military history. So.
Sure.
I started in Hawaii, and I went to the USS Arizona, and the reason is my neighbor, an Iwo Jima veteran, lost his two cousins there on December 7th. Apparently, there were 32 sets of siblings on that ship. I don't know if you ever heard about that.
I did not know that, and I've been there, and I missed that during the tour.
Yeah, and then having a brother, my twin was with me. We went to the Marine Corps Air Station because he's a former pilot. Saw an Osprey, which takes off up and down. It's a regular carrier plane. And then F-35 Lightning, a fifth-generation plane. Again, they put fans in the middle so it can go up and down instead of just taking off. Guam was fascinating. As you know, they took Guam back in 44, also with the islands of Tinian and Saipan to bomb the Japs. And the last Japanese to surrender, I was at the officers' club there, was in 1972. 28 years somebody was hiding up there in the Highland jungles.
Amazing.
And
yeah, that's fascinating.
And just to let you know, at the club there were naval officers from Japan, Australia. The U.S. is building up with the other partners the forces in the Pacific for the Chinese. So it's going to be interesting over the next 10 years. Now, Tokyo was fascinating. It took 3.5 hours from Guam. I was telling my daughter there, the city was destroyed in 23 with an earthquake, burned down. And then in 45, the Americans bombed it, firebombed it, and killed over 80,000 people and destroyed the city. So when you go through there, there's not an old building anywhere. And for 13 million people, it looks pretty darn good.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that, John. Never been. It does look amazing from a distance. Hey, thank you so much. Welcome back to the States. We head to the break. Mike Tannenbaum will join us next.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Come back here on a Tuesday, the NFL draft a month away, and what is going to happen? Quarterbacks galore. many of them from the SEC other than C.J. Stroud. Where will they all go? Mike Tannenbaum, the former GM in the NFL, now ESPN analyst, joins us. Mike, thank you very much. Let's start at the top. There's a lot of, not a lot, but some controversy or confusion about where Carolina will go between C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young. You seem to like Bryce Young. Good afternoon. Tell us why.
Great to be with you, Paul, even though I can't see you, but it's great to hear you. I would say, look, it's close, but Bryce Young, to me, has a chance to be dynamic and a great NFL player because of his arm strength, his anticipation, and his ability to move in the pocket. As it relates to C.J. Stroud, I like him a lot too, Paul. It's almost like 1 and 1A. I just thought when they played the game, Bryce Young was a little twitchier, and I thought he had much better pocket movement and made plays with his legs.
Mike, for those who haven't read it on ESPN.com, has C.J. Stroud next, and then Will Anderson pick third. Levitt's fourth. Let's talk about him for a second. I'm not saying he's come out of nowhere because he's been expected to go pretty high, but he seems to be moving up the charts. What's going on with him?
You know, Will Levis reminds me a little bit of Ben Roethlisberger. He's a bigger physical guy. He didn't play great against Tennessee. That was a bad game for him. I was expecting more. He didn't have Wandale Robinson this year. He dealt with a lot of injuries as well, not to make excuses. But when you talk about floors and ceilings, he has a very high ceiling because of his physical nature. He transferred from Penn State. A little curious that he couldn't beat out Sean Clifford at some point. But I like his upside. And if I'm Indy, I'm sitting right there. I'm getting a guy that may be able to play early and should have a really good NFL career.
And Mike, your next pick is someone I think everybody watching and listening really admires, but we've somewhat forgotten about him because he was hurt. And all the excitement and the attention has been on Anthony Richardson. So how I'll try not to act like I'm outraged because I'm actually intrigued more than outraged. How does Hendon Hooker end up getting in the top five or six in your draft?
If it wasn't for his ACL injury, I think he may be talking about the first pick overall. He led the nation, Paul, in yards per pass attempt. He gets the ball down the field with great accuracy. Started 37 games, started Virginia Tech, came over and thrived with Josh Heupel. He has prototypical size. And when I scouted him, when I was scouting Tennessee at the Orange Bowl, he was really engaged despite being hurt. At the Senior Bowl, he was very engaged despite not playing. I think he has tremendous football character. And when you look at Anthony Richardson, I'm intrigued by him too, but he was 115th in the country in accuracy last year. That matters, and he's only started 13 games. So when you put their resume side by side, I think it's actually pretty easy to pick Hendon Hooker over Anthony Richardson.
Mike, I don't want to be that guy that just acts like I didn't hear it because I know I did, but I want to go back for a second and have you expound on it. You said, had he not been injured, you're talking about Hendon Hooker in the South Carolina game, you think he could possibly have gone at the top. Explain.
Look, just put the Alabama game on. Alabama puts out more defensive players year in, year out. Obviously, now Georgia's in that conversation. He was exceptional against Alabama. And when you're evaluating a player, Paul, you want to look at them against their best competition. Hendon Hooker was exceptional against the best competition. And when you put in all the other sort of variables in terms of size, intangibles, his leadership, his intelligence, he checks every box. Bryce Young, I love. I have Bryce Young going number one. But when you look at their physical sort of prototypes, you could actually make an argument for Hendon Hooker over Bryce Young. Obviously, he's dealing with the ACL injury, and that's why I'm going number five.
Listen, I don't want to play games here because I don't know anything and you know it all. But you describe someone who looks really good, who has looked really good against great competition. You are also describing the Georgia quarterback Stetson Bennett, but I don't see him on your top 32. Why not?
You know, Stetson Bennett is an undersized guy. He was a really good athlete who got better and better. I think he's going to be really intriguing. I could see a team like Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots taking him because he has great football character and he's been a great athlete. He's just going to have to prove, can he be a pocket passer consistently at his size? He'll certainly get an opportunity, and I think his story will be really intriguing to follow once we get to training camp.
A couple months ago, a lot of people, Mike, in your industry, thought Jalen Carter could go at or near the top of the draft. Maybe not first or second, but at least in the top three or four. He's had a terrible couple of weeks, if not a couple of months. What's happened to him and where do you think he'll end up?
You know, Paul, a lot of times when we go through this process, and sometimes guys have bumps in the road where they may have had, you know, a DUI or, you know, possession of drugs or something, teams will oftentimes give the player the benefit of the doubt. We're dealing with a very serious situation here where there are two fatalities, and we don't know the extent of Jalen Carter's involvement. And maybe it'll be cleaned up before the draft, but maybe it won't. And I can just tell you from being a GM and running two different organizations, Paul, when you turn in that card and you look to your left and to your right and look at your owner and the head coach, you have to be convicted on what type of person you get it. And that doesn't mean they couldn't have had trouble. We were in Miami and drafted Laremy Tunsil. That turned out to be a great pick. That was a victimless situation. This situation is very different. It's a tragedy, one in which is going to impact Jalen Carter unless it's resolved.
Mike Tannenbaum with some fascinating comments that we will be chewing on the rest of the afternoon. Thank you very much, Mike. Be well. We come back and get your reaction to some of the things that he said. We're around the rest of the afternoon at 855-242-7285, and we're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back in here on a Tuesday afternoon. How about Cliff in Mississippi? Good afternoon, Cliff.
Hey, Paul. I vote to keep the guest on the show. I actually learned something from the guest that you have on the show, so please don't get rid of the guest, okay?
Thank you. We're good.
But anyhow, I just wanted to give you an update. My wife, Linda, and I were down in Rolling Fork, Mississippi today working with the volunteer groups down there, and I'm telling you, it would do your heart good just to see how many people are working down there and how many people are passing food out and water. I mean, it's just a sea of humanity down there, and everybody has got a job, and it's just really, it's really heartening to see the people come together like that to get that town cleaned up, you know. She and I both taught school at a school there, and we lived there for a while. The house that we lived in doesn't exist anymore, but it's really a moving thing to see how people have come together down there.
Well, that is a fantastic story, Cliff. Thanks to you and Linda for doing great work, and we appreciate it. And we're thinking about everyone down there. James is up next in Gulf Shores. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. I just had a couple questions for you. And the only reason I called today was because this is the first time I've heard other networks actually mention Hendon Hooker. I mean, at one point last year, around week 7 or 8, they were talking about him being a possible Heisman winner. Obviously, the injury happened, and, yeah, we stunk it up against Georgia, which, well, Georgia was the best team. And then, obviously, we didn't do very well against South Carolina. But where is this resurgence coming from, and why didn't people see it before?
Yeah, I'm not really sure, and I'm not a former NFL GM like Tannenbaum is, but he said that, you know, he, other than seeing him perform, everything about him is exciting the draft people. I think he came on and at the midpoint of the season. He was outplaying everyone. So I think what Tannenbaum said was a little bit contradictory, though, because, you know, just because he played well against Alabama, he also had he had a great offense. Yeah, he had people like Wright on the offensive line, and he had Hyatt, both of whom could end up in the first round as well. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check out Susie up next in Georgia. Hello, Susie.
Hi, Paul. Well, the caller you just had on answered the question I was going to ask you, because I was watching SportsCenter today, and the Herndon Hooker thing came up, which really caught my attention real fast. So I know your comments on that now. I don't need to ask you about that. But I do want to congratulate JK, my opponent, for defeating me, which I'm not surprised, but I'm pretty proud that I was only like 32 votes or maybe moving on. to meet legend.
Well, Susie, I can assure you that you lost in spite of we tried to do everything we could to sneak you on board, including having a couple of recounts. I called a guy down and said, find me enough votes for Susie to win.
Oh, you're kind.
I don't care how
you're
get
kind,
them.
But, you know, this whole thing has just put such a happy place in my heart. I've just enjoyed it, never expecting to win, but even getting past the first bracket, I think it's wonderful. But can I ask you this? How do you get your picture on with your name?
Oh, that's easy. You stay on hold, Susie, and we will give you the secret sauce to how
awesome.
The world can see you. Okay, thank you, Susie. We'll get to you in a minute. We'll get to you off the air in a minute is what I meant to say. Expired, interesting name, a deadly name, calling from Texas.
What's going on, Paul, with your big brain? What's going on today?
We are doing great.
Oh, man, always good to hear that. Hey, just wanted to call about Jim and Jeff. They want this done. They want that done with your show. And really all the callers want done is for you never to answer their calls again. Those guys are absolutely pathetic, okay? But maybe I've been listening to this show a long time, and I started deciding to call in because I know I'm really valuable to the show. Those guys, man, if they were a dollar bill, I wouldn't take it. You know what I mean? That's how bad it is. So when you answer those calls and listen to that nonsense, that's what it is nonsense. And I know you got a big brain, big, nice, shiny domed head with a huge brain in it. And you know, it's a great show, but those guys can ruin the show. Not your interview guys, even though I didn't agree with the NIL mumbo jumbo a while ago and all that stuff. Really, the transfer portal is the biggest reason why there's so much parity in college basketball right now. Not really the NIL. I know it helped Miami a little bit and this and that, but you know, they were one shot away from getting knocked out in the first or second round. I can't remember. I drank too many Miller Lights since then. But anyways, I just wanted to tell you, Paul, you got a great show. Keep Jim and Jeff off the show. Keep most of Convict Nation, Convict U off the show, which is Alabama. And you're going to, you know, keep on soaring in the ratings. And I got two words for you. Jiggle.
I hear you. Hey, thank you, Expired. Really appreciate your call. Booker is up next. Hey, Booker.
Hey, Paul. I call to give my concession speech. I received the devastating news from my son, who's got the same name as an Alabama basketball player, about 1 o'clock this morning. He was down in Houston that I had been slaughtered, and I ran an entitlement campaign, and I'm apologizing.
Well, Booker,
right now.
Let me try to make it simple. I mean, you were up against one of the biggest names on the show, and he ran. And, you know, Handsome Joe ran an underhanded campaign, so you just have to accept it.
I accept it, but I still have to apologize to all of my relatives down in Milledgeville and Waynesboro and Opa-locka and Fitzpatrick, Alabama, and Normal and Montgomery and Phenix City and Vidalia and Waynesboro, Georgia. I campaigned too much up in Ohio.
Yeah,
in
no,
New Jersey.
Yeah, Booker, that's the problem. You've got to use the Southern strategy. That's how you get elected on this show. You don't win in Ohio and Pennsylvania. You win in Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana,
and
South Carolina.
And here, my congregation that I've served, that I've been serving for 38 years. And by the way, Paul, Sunday before last was my 60th anniversary as a pastor.
Oh, my goodness. That is remarkable.
I started pastoring on the third Sunday in March in 1963 in a little place north of Columbia called Chapin, South Carolina. And I was a junior in college and a freshman in the seminary.
Well, you've done okay.
Yeah, so I humble pie tastes pretty good, and so congratulations to Handsome Joe, and I apologize to all of my folks especially the ones that I know down in Pineapple, Alabama.
There's some feeling that the votes in Pineapple never got counted correctly. Hey, thanks for the call. We head to the break. We have a long way to go, and we hope you will stick around. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.